Hi, Namaste, what's up geeks? This is episode 115 of the Desi Tech Podcast. On other podcasts from Forspire, BingeOn has four English drama series that you can watch. And on the latest Attention Plus with Arnab Ray, Arnab talks about why he's lost respect for Kohli and why the big pharma might not necessarily be the big evil guys that we make them out to be. So do check them out. Head over to Forspire.net. That's the number 4, S-P-I-R-E.net. And now on with What's Up Geeks. And of course, we have Vijay with us. Hi, Vijay.
Hi, everyone.
So, Vijay, one of the advantages of having a non-regular podcast like this, where we don't necessarily put out an episode and every week, is sometimes we get a chance to take it all in and also gather feedback from all around. So that's kind of like making lemonade out of lemons, I guess. But what I'm talking about is about Apple Silicon. It was news a few weeks back. Now we've got the reviews, which is what we're going to be talking about later in the show. But before we do that, let's check out all the news that has happened in broken news. And of course, this is something that kind of came as a bolt from the blue for me, where Google announced that Google Photos, the service which probably all of us use, at least on the Android side, 100%, it's not going to be free as much anymore, right? Did you check this one out?
What they said was storing at high quality is no longer going to be free. And I think regular quality, which is, of course, not ideal, but it's that will continue to be still free. It is definitely a letdown because due to the higher storage allocation from, like, what the default storage that Google provides is like way higher than what
15 GB, like, right? Don't think anyone else gives out 15.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people were solely using Google because of that. And high quality, even though ideally you would want to store everything in the original quality, but given that most of us only take photos on our cell phones nowadays, I think high quality was still good enough to capture those. But now that you have to pay for even high quality photos is disappointing. I guess Google is like trying to, turn up the monetization of all their platforms slowly.
I guess one good thing though is they've said, of course, the news is that Google has said that the 15 GB limit is going to apply to all the high quality photos. And if you exceed that, you will have to go for paid storage. And but the silver lining, if you could say, is the fact that they said all the photos that you've already put in, your existing photos will not count towards the limit. So I guess that's fine. They said that any new photos after, I believe the date is Feb 1st, 2021. I'll have to check that. But any new photos would only count towards that limit.
I read the same thing. I'm not sure about the exact date, but yeah, it was sometime early next year when things would start counting towards the limit. So I anticipate like major internet traffic from now till like from all of us.
And it's not just Google Photos. In the past, any Google Docs which you create, and when I say Google Docs, I mean I include the word processor or what is it called, Slides or Google Sheets. Of those documents did not count towards the storage limit. And now, of course, starting February, when that's going to happen, so any of your files are going to be counted within your limit.
Yeah, but I think that is not that big of a deal because those files tend to be like few 100 kilobytes at the most, not more than that.
And unless some business is actually using it seriously, From what I know, I guess most of it would be household Excel, household spreadsheets and stuff. Of course, I think some businesses do use, the Google Docs. Anyway, so yes, do if you are somebody who has a lot of photos and who, especially if you shoot photos in a professional SLR camera or something, and you use Google Photos, or even if you use your iPhone photos or your phone photos into your Google Photos, starting, you might want to start saving up for a Google One storage plan in 2021. And moving on, this is kind of, you can file this under expected predictable news. We did report about this huge feud which is going on between, Epic, is it the makers of Fortnite?
Yeah, Epic.
And Apple, because Apple takes a huge 30% cut of your revenues from the App Store. So quite predictably, I think as the case is coming up for hearing, Apple has reduced its App Store cut from 30% to 15%. Now, this is not for everyone. This is for developers who make under $1 million in sales. So, which is certainly good. I believe it covers, from what I've read in one article, all more than 90% of the developers.
Yeah, it's a very good move by Apple. And I am always for any of these kind of moves where the people who are responsible for making a ecosystem popular, they get benefited. It's always good. Under 1 million also means that it's mostly small developers who run one or two or a handful of developers working together to maintain and support an app. It's always good that those small companies get a break.
Now, of course, the ball is in Google's court. They have not yet said anything about cutting the Play Store tax.
Yeah, it's a matter of time. I mean, I don't think they can hold off for much longer. I think I would expect in the next 2 or 3 months, they would slowly unroll out the same kind of terms.
Hope so. In the good news does continue, because Microsoft, in the later vandalum latest hour, there I drustai and whatnot, they have said we are going to take on Zoom too, and they have decided to make Microsoft Teams free for users. So up to 200 users can now you can have video calls and you can have team calls.
This is a great move, although kind of late, but I think it's good that Microsoft finally did it. And it's good that they did it with Teams instead of some idiotic old product like Skype or something, which nobody bothers to use anyway. So, and Teams is, I think, one of their best products till date. So
yes,
it's good that they focused on making that free instead of some other unnecessary platform.
I'm not sure how many individuals use Teams. Of course, most of us, at least in my work, we've used Teams, and it's definitely it's got its problems, but it's certainly an excellent product. But this is one thing, though. I mean, both Microsoft has taken a shot at it, and Google also responding to Zoom's ubiquitous. It's become a household word now. Everyone's now, said, okay, we're going to make our product also free. But there's one basic feature which Zoom provides, which nobody seems to think of. And that is that Zoom allows me to record stuff. And neither Teams or Google Meet allows me to do that easily.
Yeah, and I'm surprised why they would not. I mean, it's not something that's a very tough concept. I mean, WebEx and others, the older generation ones have had it for a while. So I don't know why these platforms are still taking longer to roll out that feature.
Google, in fact, even if you do go for the paid tier of Google, what is it called? G Suites become something else. Google Workspace, if I'm not wrong, or something like that. So even if you take the paid tier, you will not be able to record it. For that, you need the enterprise license, which is so stupid. Anyway, and before we move on, I just found this kind of weird. I mean, I like wacky tech. I mean, we all are. Foldable phones came out last year, and this year, of course, we've had refinements. So obviously, it's, you know, the gauntlet has been thrown to further the zany designs, and it doesn't get zanier than this. Did you check this out? Oppo unveiled a scrollable phone. So when I say scrollable, it's a screen which is rolled inside the phone. So you kind of pull the phone apart and it becomes a tablet. So it doesn't fold, the screen unrolls itself like a scroll from the Kings and Queens, days of Kings and Queens.
Yeah. So what was old is now new again. But anyway, I think Oppo should not really get too much credit for it, because I believe TCL actually rolled out that concept
about a year ago.
Yeah, like close to a year ago. And when I looked at the Oppo phone, concept videos and all that, it looks almost identical to what TCL had shown at that time, except that TCL was a very early prototype and it didn't look very polished, but the mechanism and everything seemed to be almost the same.
And I believe even LG had showed off a TV with a rollable.
I remember that as well. I think it's they have to they are just like basically trying every way of applying this foldable screens and seeing how they can make it work. Let's see, I mean, if it actually makes it from concept to a product, we'll see how well it does.
The iPhone 2030 will be rollable. It'll be one more thing where the iPhone twin, whatever it is, will become also the iPad.
Yeah. But 2030 is probably more likely, because Apple doesn't jump onto these things, right away. They take their time, and which I don't mind, because when they roll it out, eventually they usually do an excellent job of it.
All right, so that kind of wraps up the news section. Let's take a quick break, and on the other side, we're going to talk about Apple Silicon. So stick around. Thanks for being there. And like we said, flashback to 3 weeks ago, was it, when we had that One More Thing event? So this is the third event in 2 months from Apple. The first one was the one with the iPads and watch. Then we had the iPhone event. Now, of course, then we had the Mac event, which was, in fact, you had brought up the point in the previous podcast, saying that this was long overdue, and they did promise Macs with Apple Silicon. So Apple finally did release it, and it's now gone beyond the video. And of course, people have been using it. So before we talk about it, why don't you just tell us what it is that Apple announced and why it's significant?
Yeah, I mean, Apple, when they started making their cell phones, initially they were using third-party sourced processors. And eventually at one point, with iPhone 4, I believe, that they introduced they acquired one of the chip design firms, and then, brought the whole manufacturing of their CPUs into Apple itself. And from that time onwards, Apple has been iterating on their own design, custom designed Apple CPUs, and they have pretty much been the leader in mobile CPUs from that point onwards. I mean, none of the other competitors like Qualcomm or anybody could even touch or even, you know, reach like 75% of their chip performance. And at that time itself, you know, people are speculating that, you know, one of the outcomes of this could be eventually sometime down the road, Apple ditching Intel from their Mac and other computers, and then, you know, replacing them with their own process. And I think that is what now has happened. Apple feels extremely confident that their platform is now, you know, scalable enough that they can take it way to very high in terms of performance, and they don't need to depend on any third party like Intel to provide them with processors. And Intel, meanwhile, has slowly started circling the drain over the last few years in terms of performance. And I think Apple found the right time to basically make this move, and looks like they have done an extremely good job there.
And historically speaking, of course, this is not the first time Apple has changed its chip vendor, right? I mean, going back, way back, initially they moved from whatever they had to PowerPC.
Yeah, so this is something that I think probably the fourth time that Apple is transitioning their computers. They started off with a Motorola processor. Then at some point from Motorola, they moved to PowerPC, which was a major transition. Then from PowerPC, they moved to Intel. And now the fourth one is now going from Intel to the Apple's own CPUs. So this is the fourth time they're doing it. And each time they have gotten better and better at it. So I think the PowerPC to Intel itself was pretty well executed, although it took a much longer time to really become stable and kind of move everything seamlessly. But this time it seems like, you know, everything is, they hit the ground running and everything is working fine from day one, except for some one or two minor things, which is not so minor for some folks, but I think for majority of Mac users, I think those items are not a big concern, which is basically like, you know, the ability to run Windows on the Mac, which is probably going to come some, you know, very soon, probably, you know, I would expect sometime next year, that part of the puzzle will be solved. But right now, that is the only thing that kind of is holding back the M1 based Max.
So, of course, to put this in perspective, we also had Microsoft undertake a similar journey. So again, you know, it's a little bit of a flashback, but along with Windows 8, when Microsoft launched the first Surface, they also had a Surface RT device, which ran a version of Windows called Windows RT, which essentially worked on these Qualcomm processors, which is what we find on phones. And the one major difference, of course, compared to what Apple is doing now, is Microsoft straight away said that, yeah, your existing Windows applications will not run. There is no emulation. There's nothing. So you can only buy these, kind of Fisher-Price kind of apps which are available on the Windows store, which is actually a joke, because you can't even find many of Microsoft's own applications on the Windows store. I don't know any serious application which is actually available there. So Windows RT, of course, met an early demise, and Windows 10 kind of reset it. They said they gave up, but Microsoft is again giving it a second shot now, right? Windows on ARM.
Whoa. Yeah. I mean, this time at least it's not a separate brand name like Windows RT was. So it's basically Windows running on ARM. But as far as, you know, the end users or consumers are concerned, it's going to be just Windows 10 running on whatever device Microsoft is designing. So at least I think they didn't add to the confusion by rolling out one new brand again. But yeah, Microsoft somehow hasn't been able to get it back together when doing this kind of cross-platform things. it's I don't know, it's like the Windows RT was a big flop, and it looked like they had kind of given up on it, but looks like they somewhere, you know, just had some little bit of hope that to revive it someday. And the other problem is, you know, unlike Apple, Microsoft does not really design their own CPUs and stuff. So they are still you know, relying on third parties to give them the appropriate CPUs. And right now, other than Apple, nobody from the ARM processing side of things, nobody has been able to design a chip that can stand up to the best Intel and ARM, Intel and AMD chips. So ARM has been kind of struggling in the performance on Qualcomm and other vendors. Of course, right now, I think other than Apple, Qualcomm is pretty much the only big option.
And Samsung, Nvidia, of course.
Yeah, no, Samsung and Nvidia do it, but they Samsung does it only for their own devices, and Nvidia given up on the computing
space.
They are now into like IoT and other stuff. So right now, Qualcomm is pretty much the only major competitor for Apple. And Qualcomm has... I mean, just because of the lack of competition, because Apple is a kind of a world of ecosystem, and they are really not really in competition with anybody else. So Qualcomm has sort of become a monopoly now, and the result of that is like there is zero innovation. They just keep bumping up slight increases in CPU frequency, and maybe some cache levels and stuff, and minor tweaks to every generation, and they are just happy to do that because people don't have any choice other than to buy their chips. So somebody has to take a daring step on the non-Apple side of the this arena, and basically say that we are going to take on Qualcomm and design something in-house which will work much better, but doesn't seem that it's happening. I mean, there were rumblings that Google is doing that, but the way Pixel and other phones are going, I don't think Google might come up with anything in the near future.
You made an interesting point saying that ARM, that is the design on which even Apple's silicon is designed, that has traditionally been more power friendly. That is, it consumes a lot less power. It's very power efficient, but certainly in terms of sheer power, when I say power in terms of performance, brute strength, your desktop processors like your Intel processors or your AMD processors, they were way leagues ahead. But when Apple made the announcement that they're switching to Apple Silicon and they announced their first M1 processor, what they said is, okay, you know what? Because we are, this based on ARM, this is going to be way more power efficient than anything from Intel. Though surprisingly, for a company that loves to bash its competitors and sometimes even their own partners, they refuse to take any names. So they said, we are going to be way more power efficient. At the same time, we are also going to be very, very, very more, extremely powerful, extremely, even the performance. So it's not just, people took that with a grain of salt, right? I mean, I was also very skeptical because the graphs, for example, they made hollow terms like saying from the best-selling Windows PC or from the, from top Windows tablet, things like the top Windows laptop or top processor. And they had graphs which didn't have labels on its X and Y axis. So,
yeah. It was very weird, and I mean, I think, I don't know, maybe it was like, it's not like Apple to kind of do that.
To shy away from taking a dig.
Taking a dig, and they normally, they quantify things. I mean, they may not use too many, technical jargon in their slides, but they definitely, where it matters, they definitely they put in the relevant terms there. And that particular presentation somehow was very vague in terms of what to expect, and I guess in hindsight it looks like they meant it to just be like to set the expectations low so that they can basically blow people away with what the reality is. But at that right. time, it was like it didn't give people much confidence that things were really going to be great. Most people, I think, expected, and having seen Microsoft struggle through this transition, they expected something similar to the Windows Surface Pro X, where you know things largely worked okay, but there were major performance issues and battery life claims did not really live up to expectations. So I think people expected something more closer to the that experience than you know a real you know a mainstream computing experience. And looks like Apple was just kind of you know taking people for a ride with that.
Right. So they've essentially rolled out the new processor in three devices, the MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro, and the Mac Mini. And the surprising thing is the MacBook Pro is kind of, I mean, you have the same processor across all of these three, and all three of them have been very well received. It's not sold or anything right now yet. But in terms of just the reviews, people are saying it's a huge leap forward in terms of performance.
Yeah, I mean, that is the amazing part. And the thing is, they have so much of bandwidth left in the sense that both the Mac Mini and the MacBook Air, they deliberately didn't put in a CPU fan just so that they can differentiate the MacBook Pro from those two. Otherwise, people would really not have any reason to pay some $200-$300 extra between the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro to justify that $200-$300 extra. All you are actually getting is that CPU fan.
Right.
Otherwise, it's like, pretty much the same level of performance. And for typical use cases that most people, like I would say 70% of the Mac users, whatever they do on their Mac, I think your MacBook Air will handle it without any problems at all. Especially if you spring a little bit extra and get the 16 GB version of it instead of the default 8 GB. I think that would be the best computer for most Mac users, it looks like.
And yeah, you also bring up a good point, because one of the things which Apple has done with the Apple Silicon is they've also included the RAM, the memory into the chip. So it basically makes that once you buy a laptop or once you buy a computer, you won't be able to upgrade the memory.
The one the disadvantage, but at the same time, it was not like the Macs were ever
average, known.
Most Macs, I don't in fact know of any Mac laptop which had upgradable memory slot. You usually had to go in and get it. There was nothing you could open and do yourself. You had to take it to Apple and they could upgrade it for you. And I think that way it's not a big change for most users, but it is still, 16 GB is still on the lower side when you see the availability. See the kind of applications that people will typically use Mac for. So I feel that they should have at least a 32 GB option, which I'm sure is coming next year. It's just that right now, I think they are only be able to ramp it up up to 16 GB. But yeah, I think once they have more RAM options, it's going to be, I think they will be able to roll it out to the rest of their lineup. Right now, that's why I think we have only those three models.
Yes, and obviously we are going to be getting the actual Mac, the desktop, and also the trash can. What's that? That's called the Mac Pro, right?
Yeah.
And all of that with maybe future. I'm assuming probably with the next iteration of the Apple Silicon, maybe your M2 or M3 or whatever, or maybe even a souped up M1.
And I think those will be at least a couple of years away, because there are some hardware gaps that that Apple has still to resolve. One is right now they are not able to allow any external GPUs, and that is very important when it comes to like people who buy professional grade, you know, Macs. And other thing is, I think you basically need some kind of ability to pop in, like basically when it comes to Mac Pro, I think upgradability is a big thing. So you cannot have everything like, you know, on the chip itself. That be a version of it where you can remove and add stuff. So yeah, if they cannot make that, then there won't be any takers for it. So I'm guessing those, you know, professional level machines are at least a couple of years away from now.
Absolutely. And of course, I can't resist taking a dig at Microsoft again, though we listeners know I love Microsoft. But if you remember, I think it's been a year or 2 years since they also, nothing drastic. They just said that they have this new design language called Fluent Design, and they showed off some slides with that. So it's been 2 years down. Fluent Design has not made its way across Windows 10 yet. What they did last week was Microsoft just said, you know what, remember that Fluent Design which we spoke about way, way, way ago when dinosaurs roamed the earth? Here's what it might look like in Edge. And they showed off some design samples which are only particular to Edge, which will come in the near future.
Yeah, again, I mean, no timelines, just some vague indications of when, and also just affecting one application. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Microsoft at this time, I don't know what how their project planning and stuff looks like. It seems pretty crazy that you are moving at these kind of glacial pace when rest of the world is moving so fast. So,
and yeah, especially their old competitor has managed to make such a drastic change so smoothly.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's pretty much it. Probably I took one dig too many at Microsoft, but Microsoft, you know.
And I think Microsoft finally, you know, they might get their, best, compliment when once my Apple is able to support running Windows in parallel on the Mac, and probably that will be the best, the fastest, you know, Windows on ARM.
you never know. That'll be the day I buy I'll buy an iPad Air. Or not iPad, I'm a MacBook Air. Yeah. All right, so I think that's a wrap for today. Thanks for listening. And if you did like it, if you didn't like it, do let us know. Head over to Forcepire.net or hit me up on Twitter. I am at the Vikram Mohan, and Forcepire is available as at Forcepire Podcasts. So do let us know. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye.